This is Cole Silver, and welcome to another edition of the Rain Dancing Expert Audio Series. You already know how to prepare a case for trial or draft that important contract, but how much do you know about running a profitable law office? Do you have systems in place to ensure that you're using time and your employees effectively and efficiently? Do you want to increase your revenues while controlling your costs? Well, if you do, today's guest can help. Thomas Begley Jr. Esquire is a 62 graduate of the Georgetown Law School. He is the managing partner of Begley & Bookbinder, a New Jersey law firm specializing in asset protection and Medicaid planning for seniors. Tom is a fellow of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys and is a certified Medicaid planning attorney. Tom is not just an expert in elder law, but is also the co-author of the best-selling book, Profitable Law Firm Management, which helps lawyers implement automated systems for every aspect of their practice, from hiring staff to attracting clients. Welcome, Tom. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for inviting me, Cole. Good to talk to you.
So, Tom, if you had to name or describe the keys to what makes a profitable system of law firm management, what would they be?
Well, I would go back one step and just mention a book that I read many years ago called The E-Myth Revisited. And it was written by a guy named Michael Gerber, not for lawyers, but for business people. And he had some interesting observations. One is that to be a successful business, you need three people. One is the entrepreneur. That's the person who has the vision for the future. Where is the business or the firm going to go? Then you have the manager who sort of brings order out of some of the chaos that's ingrained in the entrepreneur's vision. And then you have the technician who does the day-to-day work. And for most small law firms, I think we tend to spend most of our time working as the technician. But if we look around us, we see in society that the person who gets the highest reward is the entrepreneur, then the manager, and then the technician generally gets the least reward. So we have to reorder our thinking a little bit and spend more time as entrepreneur, more time as manager, less time as technician. And to do that, you have to kind of come up with a plan and actually spend some time to make it happen.
Let me ask you something.
But to answer, go ahead.
With respect to these three sort of elements of an effective business, one, where is the marketer? Is he or she the entrepreneur?
He or she might be the manager.
The manager.
The entrepreneur would be the guy who comes up with a plan to do the marketing, but the person who actually goes out and does the marketing is probably going to be the manager. In a law firm, the technician is the person who works on the files.
Gotcha. And let me also ask you this with respect to these three people or functional roles. Do they have to be lawyers in today's law firm?
In most law firms today, the managing partner is a lawyer but doesn't practice law, and in the big law firms. In smaller law firms, it's all one person. And in most law firms, or many law firms of some size, the marketing person is not a lawyer and the law firm administrator is not a lawyer. We have a small firm, only three lawyers, but in our firm, we have a law firm administrator who's a non-lawyer.
Okay. Thank you. So I'm sorry I interrupted, but you were going to name the keys to a profitable practice.
Well, I think there are five. The most important one is people. The next one is strategic planning. The next one is practice development. And then there is systems and time management. So I thought we could talk a little bit about each one of those.
That would be great. So let's talk about people first.
People are the most important ones. And I think that there, when you're looking to hire people, you want to get somebody, number one, who has passion, somebody who really loves what they're doing, cares about what they're doing, and isn't just a 9-to-5 person who shows up, does the minimum, and goes home. If everybody who you have working with you loves their job, they're going to do a great job. So part of it is you have to get a passionate person, and then once you have that passionate person, you have to work with them to keep that passion kindled. The next thing to look for in people is intelligence. You want bright people. Most lawyers are intelligent. We all graduated through law school. We passed the bar exam. So most of the lawyers are going to have intelligence. Staff people also need to be intelligent. The third one, which is also very important, is charisma. Do the people that you're hiring have good people skills? Or are they going to relate well to clients? And that's true, again, not only lawyers, but staff people as well. And then organizational skills. A lot of lawyers don't have very good organizational skills. A lot of people don't have very good organizational skills. But if you can get people who do, it makes their job and your job a whole lot easier. And then finally, a work ethic. Again, it comes back a little bit to passion and do you love what you're doing? Are you going to show up? Are you going to be there on time and you're going to be productive? Not everybody has a good work ethic. So there are the five things I think that really are key with people.
Before we move on to strategic plan, Tom, when you name these five types or elements, do they have to fit into the three functional roles that Michael Gerber explained in the E-Myth? Because I suspect you can't find, or it's difficult to find, someone that has all of these traits that you described.
Well, it is difficult, but the better person is going to have more of those skills. And sometimes it's a question of degree. Some people are extremely passionate, others less passionate, but still passionate. Some people are very charismatic, other people less so. Intelligence is, you know, measured on a scale. You can do IQ tests. We don't do IQ tests when we hire people. We do a test of most likely, least likely. And it's administered by a company online. It's called Kolbe, KOLBE.com. And what we try to do is when we're looking to hire somebody, we go on and we take about 20 minutes and we go through this test. What is the person that we're looking for to fill this job most likely and least likely to do in a given situation? And then we ask the person applying for the job to take a 20-minute test, most likely, least likely, that describes themselves. And then we try to see if the person fits the job. And we've eliminated a lot of bad hires by administering that test.
Great.
There's an old saying, hire slowly, fire quickly.
And I thought they said something about that with regard to marriage.
Well, law firms do.
So, Tom, let's talk about strategic planning. How many law firms excel at this, and what do you suggest?
Probably not many small law firms take the time to do it. And, again, you're going back to most small law firms don't take the time to be the entrepreneur. But if you can take some time, budget some time, put it in your calendar at the end of the year for the next year or at the beginning of the year, if you haven't already done it, sit down with somebody else, yourself and maybe a law firm administrator or a key employee, and try to come up with a strategic plan for your firm. So you start off by identifying the needs of the marketplace, that the marketplace needs that you have the ability to serve. Then look at your firm's strengths and look at your firm's weaknesses. Try to maximize your firm's strengths and try to either minimize your weaknesses or overcome your weaknesses. And one way to do that is look at your people. All people have the same strengths. So I am sort of like a big picture person, but not great on details. So I need to hire people to work with me who are good on details. So that way, as a firm, we try to have the vision and also the detail person as well. So you want to hire people and don't try to do things that your firm is not good at. Then take a look at your competition. Their strengths, what are their weaknesses? How can you market to clients that they can't? And how can they do things that you can't do? There's no sense you trying to go head-to-head with them on something they're better at than you are. So take advantage of your strengths. We all have strengths. And try to either paper over your weaknesses or at least recognize them so you're not spending a lot of time trying to do things you're not good at. Then identify the ideal client. We're going to talk a little bit more about that when we do our marketing, how to do a profile on an ideal client. And then you want to identify your goals for the year. So if you're doing a certain type of work, how many of those cases do you want to try to attract during the year? What kind of revenue do you want to generate during the year? What kind of expenses, etc.? And then come up with a written set of goals and then a strategy, again written, to achieve those goals. And then you have the five or the four important steps. Once you know what your goals are, then implement. There's a huge gap between knowledge and implementation. You can see that when you go to seminars and look at people, talk to people at the seminar, and then you go back, and people get a tremendous amount of knowledge often from the seminars, but then they go back, they're busy, and they don't have time to implement. So people who do put on seminars will tell you, you know, schedule time to go to the seminar, and then also schedule time when you come back from the seminar to implement what you'll learn at the seminar. So implementation is probably the single biggest area where people don't achieve their goals. Then you want to monitor, because not everything that you try to do is going to work. So what works, what doesn't work, make adjustments, and then persist. You have to be patient. Not everything is going to work the first time. So, but with monitoring, with adjustments, if you stay in there, you'll achieve your goals.
And how often do you suggest a firm go through this process of strategic planning? Is it once a year?
Every 3 years we kind of start from scratch. And then the other 2 years we update from the goal from the previous year or two previous years.
Okay.
So we want to make those updates.
And Tom, if you feel that most lawyers fall down in the implementation stage, meaning they have knowledge, they know what they need to do, but they just don't do it because they get busy or they just feel uncomfortable doing it, how do you keep people's feet to the fire to make sure in your firm that they do implement on the strategic plan?
Well, that's a tough thing to do, but what you want to do is have periodic meetings. So if you have a number of lawyers in the firm, maybe you have a monthly lawyers meeting. And then you also want to have at least a monthly, if not weekly, staff meeting. We, in our firm, we have a monthly lawyers meeting of about an hour. We have a staff meeting monthly, an hour and a half. And then the weeks where we don't have our staff meeting, we have a little mini meeting of about 30 minutes where we go over things with the staff. And our law firm administrator keeps track of what she assigns, and she assigns timelines and makes sure that the work is done, staff and lawyers, within those timelines.
Gotcha.
But you've got to have timelines, and you have to have accountability. And you have to use a calendar. We'll talk more about that later, but calendar can be a big friend.
Oh, that's sort of...
But again, it's being the manager, it's being the entrepreneur, not the technician. We get busy, we become the technician, we work on the files, and we don't set aside time to be the visionary and to be the manager.
Now, one of the things that you stress a lot in your book is the idea of systems and having non-expert lawyers do a lot of the different administrative and sometimes even substantive work. Can you talk a little bit about the systems that have made your firm more profitable and less costly to run than a traditional firm who doesn't use systems?
Okay, we systematize everything. We systematize every area of substantive law. We systematize how the phone's answered, how to close the file, and everything in between. And I got this idea back in 1975. There was a book written by a woman named Roberta Ramo for the American Bar Association. It was called How to Create a System. It sold for about $10, and it was the best $10 I ever spent. Roberta Ramo, at that time, was an obscure lawyer in, I think, Oklahoma. She later went on to become president of the American Bar Association. The Navy uses systems. If you ever read The Caine Mutiny, the opening line, I think, is, the Navy is a system designed by geniuses to be executed by idiots. It's not quite that extreme, but the idea there is that you have very smart people design these systems so that ordinary people can do the work. When you buy a McDonald's franchise, you don't buy a restaurant or hamburgers, you buy a system, a manual that they sell you. You go to Hamburger University and you learn how to follow the system. Almost all large businesses today use systems, and the two exceptions that I find are medicine and law. And most of the problems that plague both those professions, I think, are due to failure system.
So when you talk about systems, we're not just talking about customer relationship management and billing systems, are we? We're talking about everything from intake forms to systems that follow the file through the firm and through the pendency of the case, and also closure, so that if someone new comes into your firm or a new lawyer, they fit into a process and system and they understand how it works.
Right. One of the advantages of a system is that it enables you to train people very easily, because you can train them how to use the system, and then they can learn the substantive stuff as you go along. The big advantage to the system is consistent high quality. When we first started to do this back in 75, we thought that the big advantage was going to be that it would save a lot of time, and if you save time, you save money. And that happened. Originally, when we did paper systems, we felt that we saved somewhere between 15 and 20% of lawyer time and 15 and 20% of staff time. When we went to electronic systems, then we now feel that we save between 35 and 40% of lawyer time and 35 and 40% of staff time. But that's not the biggest benefit. The biggest benefit is you get the same high quality every time. It almost eliminates errors of omission, because part of the system is you outline every task that has to be performed in a particular type of law. So you start with the opening phone call, you end with the closing of the file, and you have all the steps in between. So you then have a check plan, which we put on the left-hand side of every file. The check plan has columns. The first column is identify the task, and then the second one is who is going to perform the task. You just write in their initials. And then the next column is when is that task to be performed. And then the last column is when is the task actually performed. So that way you can't forget something, because it's right there outlined for you. So it does lower cost, it saves a lot of time, and it makes it a lot easier to train people. I think you remember in the Navy, in the Caine Mutiny, the system is designed by your best people for execution by your staff, more ordinary people.
Did you see a corresponding increase in revenues and decrease in costs as you went from paper to electronic?
Huge, yeah. That was a big thing. to go from the paper system to the electronic system. And we actually use electronic systems for every substantive area of law. We use something called HotDocs, and we have a programmer in Salt Lake City, Utah, or Provo, Utah, that does the programming, and we keep them current, and saves us just tremendous amounts of time.
You talked before about time management and how important it was to use the calendar effectively. You know, I think lawyers in general, especially with the pressure for billable hours, the first complaint you'll hear them say is, I don't have enough time to do what I want to do, maybe, you know, see their family or, you know, go on vacation, but I certainly don't have enough time to go out and market my practice. Can you talk a little bit about how you deal with time management in your firm?
Time management is really a key to exactly what you just said. You've got to do the important things, which is come up with a strategic plan. We don't have time to do it. We've got to work on files. Market, don't have time to do it. Have to work on files. So time management is a way to free up the time to do the important things. Again, there's a book, the seminal book on time management is Alec McKenzie wrote a book called The Time Trap. And in that book, he maintains that if you use time management techniques effectively, and save 2 hours every day. So if you save 2 hours every working day of the year, you can get a heck of a lot done. So we suggest that you take one of those hours and just enjoy it, and then the other hour, focus on what's important in your firm. And part of that is going to be doing what you love to do, doing what you're good at, and giving the things that you don't particularly love, the things that you're not good at, to somebody else. So I always say that one of my goals in life is never to do anything unpleasant in my life, and people usually laugh at that, but you can achieve it. I went to a seminar done by the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Washington, D.C. They have a 2-day course called Legendary Customer Service, and they talk about that, and they say they can hire people who love to clean toilets. And that's not something I would like to do. They have no trouble at all finding people who really like to do that. So if we look around, we can first identify the things we want to do that we don't enjoy doing, and we'll be able to find somebody who does like to do those things. So that goes back to the Colby system we talked about before. You define the job, and then you find somebody who likes to do those things that you don't like to do, the
gotcha.
Job you're defining.
You know,
and,
we could...
So it makes you a lot happier and a lot more effective.
But let's talk...
But the keys...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. The keys to time management really are...
We could talk for a long time about all of the things regarding time management and strategic planning, but I want to move on to two final topics that I think are very, very important today, one being fees, and lastly, marketing and business development. But I do want to talk about fees for a second. You know, the state of attorneys' fees is in constant flux. Right now you have law firms in New York and England charging in excess of $1,000 an hour. Clients don't like the hourly fee. You do have people who are fee shopping. How do you deal with the issue of fees effectively and not get undercut and worry about you know, being a low-cost provider and having those types of clients?
Well, I think you just linked two very important things. If you're a low-cost provider, that's the kind of client you're going to get. So do number one is make sure the fees are fair. Fair to the law firm, fair to the client. And to do that, you have to know what your costs are. And most law firms have very little idea what their costs are. So we suggest that everybody keep time. The lawyer keep time. Staff people keep time, so that way we can analyze what does it cost us to do a file. So then you figure out what's your cost, you add a fair profit, that becomes your fee. Very important, I think, especially for small law firms, is have a written fee schedule. And that fee schedule has to be based on your cost plus your profit, and it has to be firm-wide. You can't have lawyers in the firm different fees for the same service, and you have to adhere to the fee schedule. Huge problem is getting lawyers to adhere to the fee schedule. They always think, well, this client won't pay that much, so I'll discount them a little bit. And what they're really doing, lawyers are bidding against themselves. So come up with a fair fee schedule. But flat fees are very desirable wherever possible. And we find that the clients like flat fees. They know, it gives them certainty. They know what something is going to cost. Every once in a while, somebody will come and say, well, what do you charge by the hour? And I say, well, if I give you my hourly rate and don't tell you how much it's going to take, then you really I haven't told you anything. What you really want to know is, what's this going to cost? Now, not all areas of law lend themselves to flat fees, but most do. So whenever possible, I think, do flat fees.
Okay.
The other thing, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I think you were going to talk about the value curve.
Yeah, there's a guy named Bill Cobb, who's a law firm manager in Texas, who came up many years ago with what he calls the value curve. And this is something you can take into consideration in A, marketing, and B, setting fees. But he did an analysis, and he said that 4% of legal work is Ken Lay got indicted in the
Enron
scandal.
Yeah.
His wife didn't go through the yellow pages trying to find out which lawyer had the lowest hourly rate. He just wanted to get the best. He didn't care what it cost. He didn't want to go to jail. That's unique work. Some work is the experience of the lawyer. You want to get the best person you can find because this is really important. That's about 16% of legal work. Brand name. I don't need the best, but I need to have somebody who's pretty good. Well, that's about 20%. So that leaves 60% of legal work as commodity work. Now, commodities are bad things because they're price sensitive. A coffee bean is a coffee bean. So you're only willing to pay the least amount you can for a coffee bean. You don't want to be providing legal services that are commodity work because then you're competing on the basis of price. There's only one lawyer in your community who does the type of work that you do who's going to win the battle of the lowest price provider, and you don't really want to be that lawyer. So try to avoid doing commodity work. Do more complex work. And I always say that general practitioners, I think, have a difficult time because so much of the work that they do is commodity work. So specialize in something, whatever you love doing, and be very good at it. The lawyer that you're going to hire for brand name or experience. Not many of us are going to get unique work.
Gotcha. Let's talk, if we can, about business development and selling. You know, I've seen you in action. You have a dynamic website. You do a newsletter. You use seminars and speeches to get clients. But it appears from an outward standpoint that you're really the main rainmaker of your firm.
That's true.
So how do you spread out the business development amongst different associates in the firm so that, you know, you've got rain coming in from all areas? How do you develop that kind of firm culture?
Well, I've always felt that your most effective marketing is internal. It's how you run your business. That's why 15 years ago we had the Ritz-Carlton Hotel come to our firm and tell us how to do things. And then 3 years ago, two of us went back and took the 2-day refresher course. And we try to deliver what I call wow. And to do that, we have what I call internal standards of excellence. When a client comes to our firm, once they've made the appointment, we stagger our appointments so a lot of people don't come all at the same time. We kind of stagger them by lawyer every half hour. So the receptionist has a pretty good idea who is coming through the door. Try to call them by name. And then the receptionist turns them over to the case manager, who goes up and calls them by name. And the case manager introduces them to me, and I call them by name as many times as possible during the client meeting. The Ritz-Carlton tells us that's important. Dale Carnegie said the sweetest sound to a person's ears is the sound of their own name. So keep calling them by their own name. The client's waiting. Have a friendly attitude. Big thing for law firms is returning client phone calls. The ABA, in their latest ethics rules, which I think the model rules came out around 2001, considered requiring ethically that lawyers return their phone calls, which is a terrible indictment of the profession to have to even think about doing something like that. Return your phone calls the same day. Man, if possible, have the staff answer the phone call so that the person doesn't have to wait for a return call. They get the information when they call in. Do your dictation or take whatever action you have to take the same day you meet with a client. We do a lot of estate planning, Medicaid planning, that kind of thing. So we have an internal rule that the lawyer has 24 hours initial client meeting to dictate the file. The person who's doing our doc prep has 24 hours to do the doc prep, get the file back to the lawyer. And then the lawyer has to review it the same day it comes back. So typically, one of our clients can have their paper within 48 hours after the initial client meeting if they have email. People like that. Copy the client on everything you do so they're aware that you're doing something. Big problem, clients look at lawyers like they don't care, they don't communicate, and all you have to do is copy them on the things that you're doing, let them know that you are working on their file. Clients are very interested in the effort that lawyers are making, even more so than the result. So let them know that what it is that you're doing. Now, as far as the actual marketing, we do some marketing on radio and media, but we don't feel that that's terribly effective. The most effective is our internal standards of excellence. That leads to a lot of referrals from our existing clients. If your existing clients are happy with you, they'll tell their friends. Reputation marketing is good. Be a good lawyer. And that requires a commitment to go to seminars, learn, read. I write books. That's not for everybody, but you can at least write articles. You can speak at CE courses. Get your name out there in the professional community, because our second biggest source of referrals is other lawyers. Our biggest source is clients. The second one is other lawyers. Now, making your dollars count starts with identifying your ideal client. So if you do a profile of an ideal client, you come up with somebody who's willing to pay and a pleasure to serve. That's the client you want. So who is that for the service that you're providing? We do elder law, so it's people over 55 years of age in 30 miles of our office. It's with, you just come up with criteria like that. Who are these ideal people? Then what is the benefit to the client? If you look at a lot of law firm websites, they tell you all about the firm, all about the lawyers, nothing about the benefit that is going to receive. The client really doesn't care if you're, a Harvard graduate, the top 1% of your class, or even if you're a lawyer, if you can solve their problem. What's the benefit to the client? How are you going to solve their client? And then what's the value that your firm can bring to the client situation? Then you kind of come up with, there are four levels of clients. One is the A client, who's you're willing to die for. The second one is the B client. You really like them. You'd like to get as many of them as you can. The C client is okay, but nothing special. And the D client is people that you want to avoid. So, Cole, earlier you mentioned low-cost provider generates a certain type of client. You want to try to avoid D clients. You want to either avoid C clients or convert them quickly to B clients. And if you don't think you can, then don't take them. And one of the interesting things is there's a guy named Harry Beckwith who wrote a book, What Clients Love.
In fact, Tom, I interviewed him for our expert audio series.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, he's fabulous.
Yeah, he is.
And one thing he talked about was the $5 cup of coffee. And he says there's perceived value. So if your fees are too low or if you have a shabby office, then that's the kind of client you're going to attract. If you have reasonable fees and a nice office, then clients who think that you're successful. So somebody asked me one time when I was doing one of these seminars, should I drive a nice car? And sure, you want to drive a nice car. You don't have to drive a Rolls Royce, but drive a nice car because it connotes success. People want to deal with people who are successful. Now, as far as selling activities, I really think that much more effective than media is to work through referral sources. So who are your five best referral sources now? And make a list of those. Then come up with a list of five potential referral sources, people you would like to do business with. And then what do these people want? Well, one thing they want is they want a referral back from you. We do a lot of special needs trust planning, and I had a contact with a referral source, sent me two very large cases, self-settled special needs trusts, and I sent him one back. This guy happened to be a structured settlement broker. And he said, you know, as long as I've been doing this, and this guy's in his 50s, he said, no one has ever sent me a case back. He said, I really appreciate that. Can't tell you how much I appreciate that. So it's not always easy for lawyers to refer back because we don't have that many opportunities, but we'll go out of your way to refer back and look for opportunities to refer back. There are more there than we think of. So try to list five opportunities to refer back and then start to do that. And always say thank you to clients. We, in the last couple of years, have been sending nanos, iPod nanos, to professional referral sources when they send us a client. And the feedback's been tremendous. People call on the phone and thank us. They write letters and thank us. They really enjoy those things. But you can't keep sending the same thing to the same referral source. So we have a list of referral sources and what did we send them. One of the things we send them is a CD of Harry Beckwith's book, What Clients Love. So we used to send them Tom Friedman's book, The World is Flat. That's kind of out of vogue. But just get something topical and send it to them, and they really like that. It's nice to be appreciated.
Absolutely. Isn't that what we all want?
Sure is.
So let's bring it home, Tom. What are the keys to marketing?
Okay, the seven keys to marketing, and I think this may be Harry Beckwith's idea too, or at least part of it is, it's mostly based on personal contact. That's the trouble with media advertising. It's not personal contact. It has to be your contact with the client or your personal contact with the referral source. It has to be client-driven. What does the client want? Not what do we want. What does the client want? We have to monitor our marketing, differentiate ourselves from others in the marketplace who do that. So maybe we're the most experienced, but don't say we're the most experienced. Just say we've been doing this for so many years. We do more of it than anybody else in the country or in the state or in our county or whatever. And if you write, people know that. If you write articles, let them know that. So how do you differentiate yourself from other people who do the same thing you do? You have to be patient because marketing takes time. And then you want to review. Remember, monitor. Are we marketing the things that bring the most profit to our firm? So don't market things that are marginal. Market the things that have the ability. And then in our marketing, define whatever it is that adds value to what we're doing.
Tom, this has been terrific. How can people get a hold of your book and get a hold of you?
Okay, our book is called Profitable Law Firm Management. It's a book I wrote with Richard Tanner, who's a lawyer in northern New Jersey. And it's published by the New Jersey Institute for Continuing Legal Education in New Brunswick, New Jersey. They have a website. We have a website. It's begleylawyer.com. And our telephone number is 856-235-8501. And thank you very much for inviting me to do this today.
Tom, this has been great. Thank you so much. So
thanks.
This has been another edition of the Rain Dancing Expert Audio Series brought to you by Cole Silver of FindCareerSuccess.com. Until next time.